A Cadre Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Cadre AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are cracking open really a cornerstone of modern investing thought.
Yeah, a truly foundational book.
Absolutely. It's a book that totally reshaped how serious investors think about the market and, maybe more importantly, how they build real lasting wealth. We're diving into Philip Fisher's classic, Common Stocks and Uncommon Profits.
And, you know, if you, the listener, are maybe feeling a bit swamped by all the market noise.
Oh, yeah.
The constant short-term speculation or, you know, that pressure to chase whatever's hot right now.
Mm-hmm.
Then this deep dive is really going to resonate. Fisher's work, it lays out this incredibly disciplined, long-term way to aim for, well, truly extraordinary returns.
It's not just about keeping up with inflation, is it?
Not at all. We're talking about potentially life-changing wealth, generational wealth even.
Mm.
And it comes from thinking like an owner, an intelligent owner of a business.
And that focus on the long game, that's what feels so urgent today, I think.
Wow.
It's such a contrast to the frantic short-term thinking that you see everywhere. Fisher asked this really elegant question. How can you, as an investor, consistently do better than the market average and really compound your wealth over time?
And his answer seems simple on the surface, but wow, is it hard to actually do?
Totally. It boils down to find a truly fantastic business, understand it deeply, and then just hold on to it.
Yeah.
For a very, very long time.
Almost forever, as he famously said. It's a philosophy built on patience, deep research, and frankly, conviction. And the man behind it, Philip A. Fisher, well, he's easily one of the most influential investors of the 20th century.
He's a real giant in the field.
Definitely. He's widely seen as the pioneer of what we now call growth investing.
I mean, the guy founded his firm, Fisher & Co., way back in 1931. Think about that timing.
Right in the thick of things.
And he ran it successfully for over 60 years. 60 mm-hmm. years. Through depressions, wars, booms, generating exceptional returns based on these core ideas. That kind of longevity is just incredible.
And what makes his viewpoint so valuable, I think, is how it fits alongside other giants, like Benjamin Graham.
Ah, the value guy.
Exactly. Graham mastered the numbers, the quantitative side, finding stocks that looked cheap based on assets or earnings. Fisher was the master of the qualitative.
The stuff you can't easily quantify.
Precisely. Things like the quality of management, the potential for innovation, the company culture. He specialized in sizing those up.
And his authority didn't come from academic theories, did it? It was purely from decades of actually doing it successfully. Buying the future, you could say.
That's a great way to put it. And you know, the ultimate endorsement arguably came from Warren Buffett.
Right. Buffett's famous line.
Yep. He said his own approach was 85% Graham and 15% Fisher. And that 15%, that's the Fisher magic.
It's the secret sauce.
It's that qualitative insight, understanding the potential for massive long-term compounding. That's what led Buffett to many of his biggest, longest-held winners. It's applying Fisher's lens.
Okay, so let's unpack the core idea here, because
mm-hmm.
it really is a different way of thinking. What's the central engine driving these uncommon profits?
At its heart, it's about being incredibly selective and incredibly patient. Fisher argued that huge wealth doesn't come from trading lots of average stocks.
No quick flips.
None of that. It comes from identifying a very, very small number of genuinely outstanding growth companies, companies with huge potential,
and then
committing to them for the long haul,
yeah.
Years, often decades. The book is really for the investor who gets that buying a stock isn't just a ticker symbol, it's buying a piece of an actual ongoing business.
So right away your focus shifts, doesn't it? Away from daily price swings and towards the quality of the underlying business.
Exactly. And to get that deep understanding, Fisher lays out this very structured process. It's got two main parts. First, there's the analysis phase. What are you actually looking for? And that's summed up in his famous 15 points.
Yeah, checklist.
Pretty much. It's a comprehensive filter, really, looking at everything from R&D effectiveness to management depth. Then phase two is about how you find the answers. His investigative technique, the scuttlebutt method.
Scuttlebutt. Love that name.
Yeah.
I'll definitely dig into that. And the discipline part. He's really strict about selling, isn't he?
Oh, incredibly strict. The book is crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
There are only a tiny handful of valid reasons to ever sell a stock you've bought using his method.
And the default is?
The default, if you did your homework right the first time, is basically never sell.
Wow. That takes some serious emotional control.
It really does. It goes against every instinct the market tries to drum into you, right? That fear when things drop or the urge to cash out when a stock doubles.
Yeah, the take profits temptation.
Fisher saw that as a major wealth destroyer. Selling your best performers too early cuts off that compounding power.
Okay, let's get into that research process first, the scuttlebutt method. Because that feels really unique to Fisher.
It absolutely was revolutionary for its time. Scuttlebutt, or the grapevine method, as he also called it.
Right.
This came from Fisher recognizing that, you know, official company statements, annual reports, they're always polished. They have a bias.
Management puts the best spin on things.
Of course. So scuttlebutt is about getting the real story, the unvarnished intelligence. And you do that by talking to people outside the company's official channels.
Like who?
Think about the whole ecosystem around the company. Customers, what do they really think of the product or service? Suppliers, are they easy to work with? Are they paying bills on time? Former employees, why did they leave? What's the culture really like?
And competitors too, right?
Yeah.
Which seems counterintuitive.
It does, but think about it. A competitor probably won't sugarcoat a rival's weaknesses. But they'll also likely give you a pretty realistic assessment of their strengths. Maybe even grudgingly.
Makes sense. You're essentially piecing together the truth from multiple angles outside the corporate megaphone.
Exactly. Triangulating, like you said earlier. The real scoop on product quality or competitive threats or management's reputation, that often comes from these off-the-record conversations.
Now, some listeners might be thinking, okay, that sounds great, but is that even possible for me as an individual investor today? Do I just start cold calling people?
That's a fair question. And maybe not cold calling CEOs, no. But the spirit of scuttlebutt is absolutely alive and well, maybe even more accessible now.
How so?
Well, think about the digital tools we have. Instead of just relying on phone calls, you can dig into employee reviews on sites like Glassdoor to get a sense of morale and culture.
Okay.
You can analyze thousands of customer reviews on product sites or forums like Reddit. You can see what developers are saying about a software company's tools and online communities. You can even test the product or service yourself.
So it's about being an active investigator, using modern tools to get that ground level view.
Precisely. It's about moving beyond just passively reading the glossy reports. This kind of primary research, even if it's digital, can give the diligent individual a real edge over analysts who are just looking at spreadsheets.
And Fisher himself used this back in the day, right? With companies like Texas Instruments.
Oh, absolutely. His early investment in TI is a classic example. He used scuttlebutt to understand the massive potential of semiconductors long before the wider market got it. He talked to the engineers, the customers. He saw the innovation engine firsthand.
Which brings us neatly to the framework that guides this research, the 15 points. This is the checklist scuttlebutt is meant to fill in, essentially.
That's right. It's the blueprint for identifying these uncommon companies. Maybe we can group them into, say, three main buckets to make it easier to grasp.
Good idea. What's the first bucket?
Let's call it business characteristics. This is about the long-term viability of the business itself. Fisher insisted on looking for companies whose products or services have enough market potential for really significant, sustained sales growth over many years.
So not just a quick bump, but a long runway.
Exactly. A multi-decade potential, ideally, not just a flash in the pan.
And tied to that is innovation.
Crucial. Point three specifically looks for management's determination to keep developing new products or processes as existing ones mature. R&D isn't just an expense line for Fisher. It's the absolute engine driving future growth and compounding.
Okay. Long runway, constant innovation. What else in this bucket?
You also need a really effective sales organization to actually capture that market potential and, critically important, worthwhile profit margins.
Meaning they can charge a fair price and still make good money.
Right. What finance folks call pricing power. Can the company raise prices a bit over time without losing tons of customers? That margin is your buffer against inflation, competition, tough times.
Makes sense. Okay, bucket number two.
This is arguably the most Fisher-esque part, management and people. This is where the qualitative analysis really shines. He dedicates, what, 5 of the 15 points just to this?
Yeah, about a third of them.
Because he knew that even the best business model can be wrecked by mediocre leadership. He looked for things like outstanding labor relations and strong executive teamwork. A happy, motivated workforce is a huge, often overlooked competitive advantage.
And he worried about companies being too reliant on one person, right? The one-man show risk.
Absolutely. One of the points is depth to its management. As an outsider doing your scuttlebutt, how do you figure that out?
Good question.
You look for signs of successful delegation. Are there strong leaders visible below the CEO? Is there a sense of succession planning? A company totally dependent on one genius founder is inherently fragile. What happens if they leave or get sick?
A whole thing could unravel.
Exactly. Fisher wanted deep institutional talent. And underpinning all of that, the absolute non-negotiable.
Let me guess. Integrity.
You got it. Unquestionable integrity. If management seems evasive, if they spin bad news too hard, if they lack transparency, Fisher's advice was simple. Walk away. Instantly. Trust is paramount.
Okay, solid business, great people. What's the third area?
This brings us back to that discipline piece, the sell criteria. This is bucket three, focusing on when and why. You might actually part ways with one of these carefully chosen stocks.
And the default setting is almost never.
Pretty much. The framework is incredibly strict, and intentionally so, to fight against emotional decision-making.
So what are the few valid reasons he allows?
Only three. Reason one, you realize you made a mistake in your original analysis. The company actually never met the 15 points criteria in the first place. Your initial homework was flawed.
Okay, admitting an error.
Right. Reason two, the company fundamentally changes for the worse. It stops meeting the 15 points. Maybe they lose their innovative edge, management integrity crumbles, their market disappears. The original thesis is broken.
That makes sense. And the third one.
This is the hardest one to justify. You find a demonstrably superior investment opportunity and you need the capital from your current holding to pursue it.
But the bar for demonstrably superior must be sky high.
Exceptionally high. It can't just be slightly better or more exciting. It has to be so clearly a much better place for your capital that not making the switch would be the bigger mistake. This prevents you from constantly chasing the next shiny object.
Wow. That really forces long-term thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, if we try to boil this whole philosophy down, what are maybe the top three big enduring messages for someone listening today?
Okay. First, I'd say management quality is paramount. Nearly a third of his checklist focuses on the people. It underscores that execution matters just as much, if not more, than a great idea. Exceptional leaders create value the market often misses early on.
Right. Second.
Second, that intense focus on outstanding growth companies only. Don't waste time on mediocre businesses, even if they seem cheap. Fisher understood the Pareto principle applies to markets. A small number of truly exceptional companies drive the vast majority of long-term gains. Find those few.
Quality over quantity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which leads right into the third key theme, the folly of over-diversification.
Ah, diversification.
That's his term. He argued that spreading your money thinly across dozens of companies you barely understand doesn't actually reduce risk. Real safety comes from deep knowledge of a concentrated portfolio, maybe just 5 to 10 businesses, you know, inside and out.
Fewer bets, but much higher conviction in each one.
Precisely. Know what you own and why you own it.
He really had a way with words, didn't he? Some of his lines just stick with you.
Absolutely. They really cut through the noise, like his famous jab at short-term traders.
Oh, I know this one.
The stock market is filled with individuals who know the price of everything, but the value of nothing.
Boom. Instantly refocuses you on the business, not the stock quote.
Exactly. It's about intrinsic worth versus fleeting price. And then there's the ultimate mantra for patience.
The selling rule.
If the job has been correctly done, the time to sell it is almost never. Just tattooing that on your forehead might save you a fortune, resisting that urge to cash in too early.
And the concentration piece summarized.
I don't want a lot of good investments. I want a few outstanding ones. Simple, powerful, and the core of his whole strategy. Quality, quality, quality.
Okay, this is all fantastic in theory, but the book's decades old. How does someone listening right now actually apply this stuff? Make it practical.
Great question. For an individual investor, I think step one is to develop a personal investment checklist. Don't just read Fisher's 15 points, adapt them, make them your own. Create a rigorous written framework you force yourself to complete before you even think about buying.
So it becomes a structured process, not an emotional reaction.
Exactly. It's your defense against impulse. And second, you absolutely have to become an active researcher using modern scuttlebutt, like we talked about earlier.
Using Glassdoor, Reddit, product reviews.
Yes. Use the digital tools available. Dig into employee morale. Scour customer forums. If it's a consumer product, try it yourself. Move beyond just reading the official company line. Be a detective.
Get your hands dirty, digitally speaking.
You got it. And maybe one more practical tip on the psychological side. Actually write down your specific, predetermined reasons to sell for each stock you own based on those three Fisher criteria we discussed.
Oh, Like, I will sell if X, Y, or Z happens.
Precisely. Keep that note somewhere visible. Then, when the market inevitably panics and your gut screams sell, you can look at your rational, pre-committed reasons instead of reacting to fear.
That's a powerful emotional anchor. Keeps you grounded.
Definitely. It helps separate the signal from the noise.
Reflecting on this whole deep dive, Fisher really was thinking differently, wasn't he? Way ahead of the curve. What's the biggest thing you take away from his work?
For me, it's the fundamental shift in perspective. Successful investing isn't financial engineering or complex algorithms. At its core, it's about partnering with exceptional businesses run by exceptional people. And the deeper your understanding of those businesses, well, knowledge is the best defense against risk.
That's really well put. And for me, building on that, in today's world, which is just obsessed with speed, with instant results, with constant updates, Fisher's work is this powerful reminder that patience is the ultimate competitive advantage. The sheer ability to find a great company and just let it compound, let management do its job over years, decades even, that ability to sit tight is probably the rarest skill in investing today, and maybe the most powerful.
Couldn't agree more. Let time do the heavy lifting.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world.
This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.